Great. Now it's about the electrical grid and everything that is attached to it. So we have three ethical hackers here who will tell you about how they hack things, how they disclose things in an ethical way, and I guess what can happen. And first we will hear Chris, then followed by Wietze, and then by Frank. So give it up, an applause for Chris.
Well, thank you very much for your introduction, and thank you very much for joining us in our talk on Hack the Grid. But before I start, I would like to ask you to remember day one of this beautiful event. No, it wasn't our awareness campaign, it was a real blackout. What was your first response? Probably, is my phone and my laptop still running? Or do I have a presentation? Is the food growing cold? That's the short term. Well, think what you would have done if this would last for a full day, or 2 days, or 3 days, or a week. This can and probably will happen in the near future, because everything is made smart and vulnerable. What we will try to do is to prevent it by hacking it. Hence the presentation, Disclosing Vulnerabilities to Help Prevent Hackouts. So to do today, I'll give you a short introduction on who we are and why we are doing this. Then Wietze will take over with, well, an example of one of the hacks, one of the 0 days we found and disclosed through our CNA, our CV numbering authority. And, well, Wietze is, in his day life, a pen tester, and in the evening, he's an ethical hacker, and in the weekend, he hacks a lot, so I'm very happy to have him on board as one of our researchers. Then we go to Frank. He's our head of CNA, so the CVE numbering authority, handling, well, CVEs on a weekly basis. In his day life, he does security as Schubert-Phyllis and a whole lot of other things, which will take a whole presentation. And at DFID, he's also our crisis manager, which I'm very happy of, because we need it sometimes. And I'll try to finish this very dark story indeed with some sort of a future perspective, a sort of a happy end. And if there's time left, there's a Q&A, but you can also visit us at D42D Cluster to have a talk on this. You might have heard of DIVD. You might know us. Well, we know you, because we scan the whole internet for vulnerabilities, most likely CVEs with a high CVSS score, 8.9 and higher. You make a fingerprint, and if you're vulnerable, you receive an email, please patch. We also do zero-day research, and that's what this talk is mainly about. And we also notified on stolen credentials. We currently hold 1.2 billion stolen credentials. So if you get an email from us which says change your password, please do it. So the scanning and notify, we have run 183 cases up until now in the last 5.5 years. We are 189 members strong. All of them volunteers, except for me. I'm the managing director. And we have been notifying 1.357629 IP addresses, which are organizations which were severely vulnerable. And we do this for free. So Dutch Institute for Vulnerability Disclosure, the Dutch stands for we do it from the Netherlands, because here it's allowed to do, the rest of the world not. But also Dutch in a literal sense, very direct, honest, and for free. If you visited MCH in 2022 and you saw our talk on SolarMan, you might remember what happened after this beautiful event. It was published in the national news that hackers could control solar converters in such an amount that they could create a blackout. Well, what do we do in the Netherlands? Then you have a parliamentary debate. And if you have a parliamentary debate, they ask questions, they can't answer, so they do research. In this case by RDI, Rijksdienst voor Digitale Infrastructuur, which is the authority on this kinds of stuff. And they said, yeah, they actually have a point. These are vulnerable, you can hack them and use them to create a blackout. On stage, here we see Frank. We've been warning SolarMan for almost 2 years that their admin panel was online with a very weak password and a simple username, which was leaked on GitHub. Jelle Ursum, is he here? He found this on GitHub and he reported it to them. They didn't listen. We tried for a while, they didn't listen. Then we went to the GovCerts, Chinese embassy, and they still said, no, it's just a testing environment. Don't worry. Well, we can see the sun coming up and going down. So then, not likely what we normally do, we did a full disclosure. So we said, okay, we're going to present what's going on. So you need to fix it. And here you see Frank live on stage negotiating with the marketing department. Is my sound is off? Yeah, okay. So what was this solar man? It was the management panel. And if you can read the numbers in the back, it's over 1 million plants. And it adds up to 10 gigawatts. And from there, you can also push a firmware update. So what would Vladimir see or Donald do with something like that? Some people might think it's a privacy problem. They can look if you're at home. Nah. Or they can switch them off. Or you can switch them all off, all 1 million at the same time. Yes, then the grid really gets hit. But once they can kind of cope with it. Then we come to what we call the Horus scenario. And many thanks to Willem Westerhof. Who's seen the presentation yesterday from Willem Westerhof? Ah, okay. Well, short story long. Watch this video. But if you have enough power, which now adds up to, well, say 5 gigawatts, you switch it off, and you switch it on. You switch it off, you switch it on, and then boom. The whole grid collapses on a national or international level or at the European level. And it will take you days to get things fixed and online again. That's his scenario, Horus, because the sun coming up and going down. Willem was my main inspiration 7 years ago with this presentation. And so, we've done a lot of research on how can this happen. And the problem is actually much more bigger than these solar panel converters. The electric car chargers, windmills, especially in the Netherlands, 30% is of the energy generated by windmills. New home energy management systems with a home battery also have enough power to hack the grid. So we extended our scope to look at all these devices which you can add up to have this 5 gigawatts. To test them, we're a voluntary organization. We don't have that much money, well, a little bit. So we buy some devices. Some hackers have it at home. But also an increasing number of organizations joining us in what we call a federative IoT hacking lab. So ALAT has the car chargers. INCS has smart meters. The Green Village has all sorts of solar home energy management systems. And with all these devices, it's just firmware extraction, start hacking, and disclose it responsibly to our CVE authority, CVE numbering authority. So we recruited a couple of researchers. We're now with about 10 hackers hacking the grid. And we cooperate with the energy sector because we need them along. And they need us. Because the grid operators, they monitor the whole network up into your home. They're not allowed to invade your home where the smart meter is. So they can't control these devices we're hacking. DFD is allowed because we have this jurisprudence in the Netherlands. We have a strong code of conduct and we kind of get away with it. Our hackers are even insured for cyber defense. Awesome, right? So we try to spread the word through demos, also here, workshops and hack events. So soon we will be in the Green Village hacking all these smart devices, handing out prizes to people who love hacking. That's the DFD Institute. We also have the DFD Academy, which is run by Astrid Ozenbrug. And there, well, young hackers teach how to hack in an ethical manner. And we'll also teach them how to hack energy systems. Also from there, we try to create more awareness in the installation branch, especially the installers who put the stuff at your home, normally with a weak passport. So very simply, start with password management. It's basically like that. So that's what we do. So that's about DIVD, why we do energy research, and now for the fun stuff, Hacking Enphase with Wietse Boonstra.
Does it work? It works. Nice. So, hello. So I started hacking this solar panel. I don't know if anybody has this device in their house. See. So I could have taken over all of them with a simple push of a button. So I thought, let's buy solar panels for my new house. Let's take an American brand because, you know, they're better than Chinese. And I was wrong. Very wrong. I took it apart. Was not necessary. If you get access to this device, there is like a VPN connection to their internal server where you can download the firmware, unencrypt it, and do whatever you want with it. So have fun. I found a proof of concept. I made a proof of concept to remote code execution on any device they had connected to the internet. Just hit the script, and it will execute a remote code execution when it reboots or the cron job runs. So, and I'm gonna take you through where the code, what is vulnerable. So if you see it, tell me. We'll go through it. So this is the first thing that I saw, and I didn't even use ChatGPT for this. So I just, is there someone that can see where the problem is? I hear something, but I will just point it out because it is in this line, it grabs the short, the first two characters of your locale parameter in the browser, and then they make a mistake here. They return the request locale, so they don't do the two letters of NL or DE or whatever your language is. Then they return that, so that's a vulnerability. Not per se, but in combination with this cache page, they append it to the cache file name right here. So you can do some fun stuff with that. The request URI is just the slash home or production parameter or path in your URL. Then it does something with the accept headers. You can manipulate too, but it was way too difficult to do something with that. So again, we're going to use the locale. So this, you can insert a path traversal to TMP and then call the file name Spray Cyber, then make it the file extension .com because that is necessary for the next part of the vulnerability. I don't know if you can see it in the back, but if it doesn't exist, the file, it will create it. If it's a directory, it will create a directory. And in the directory you want. So that's part two. This is actually the function that creates the file name. So then somewhere else there runs every cron job every 24 hours, or if you reboot it or to make it crash, it will reboot too. So it will check for fintemp.com, every file, doesn't matter. If you place a .com file in there, it's fine, right? It will check if it's a file, and then it does this. It's like, okay, backticking, base name. It's not the best secure way of checking for the file, right? So we'll get to that later. Then they do this, second place to get a vulnerability, so the cut is again in backticks, and then it's done. So you can place a file there, So, two places where you can place a nice file name, and this is Linux, right? So Linux is, it doesn't matter what you use as a file name, it will use it, so it will take it. So we're gonna create a payload that is, like, it needs to be a file name, and we need to keep something in mind, and that is, we cannot use the slash because it will make a directory out of it, so that's not what we want. We cannot use spaces, it breaks, but there's a nifty thing for that too, that is dollar, the IFS. It will create a space, so. Then this was my final payload. So it will, you terminate the previous call by a colon, I think it's called, a semicolon, the punt comma. And then it will execute Ruby code, so. And the hashtag at the end will stop the rest of the code, so it will execute that. So, I don't know why. Okay. I don't know if you can see it in the back, but this is the final, that is the final code execution on everything previously to version 8 of the Envoy. And then you can see there is. In the log files, it created a file and has a remote shell back to my system. So and then it's game over for this device. So you can root it. Every device that was connected to the internet, this was what I found on Shodan really quickly. So this is what's connected to the internet. So don't connect this thing straight away to an external IP address or something. Only 1,200 systems are currently on the internet. So I was, that's not a lot. So I was like, well, let's, I'm going to insert another coin to continue. And it was this. I don't know, can we see? So I sent Frank, I found something else. And this is their installer portal. The only thing I had to do was to add myself to every device, every customer they had in their system as an admin. And then I could, well, I could do a lot more, but I can reboot the gateway or take it offline, or I found some other stuff in code that would give me a code execution on all your devices. I did not try that because I thought this was, too bad already, so we contacted Enphase right away. They fixed it within 24 hours, luckily. It wasn't SolarMan, so. But as you can see, it is very easy to take over their portal. They did not pen test this, I think, so maybe in the future they will. So don't connect this thing to the internet if you have one, just disable it. The statistics are not worth it, so. And then I went to our Craigslist, Marktplatz, and I went to buy some more solar inverters, so probably more to come to take it all apart, so. And if you want to help, please do. And I think now it's Frank.
So, wow, that's loud. I'm running the CNA, so we took this picture 3 years ago and request your CVEs here. We just become a CVE numbering authority. So what do we do is we try to scale this up because this needs to be told to the vendors. Some are really good. They actually have a security.txt, a product security department that you can contact, a professional process. Some are not really good. They sit with their fingers in their ears and don't want to hear you. Some of them are plainly, it's not that they don't want to hear you, but they can't understand you. And that's sometimes literal because I have been in video conference calls where one colleague was translating my English text into, either Cantonese or the other Chinese language, I can't tell them apart, and translating the answers back to us so that we could discuss that. And yeah, we have the CNA team because this is not well regulated or not well implemented in the sector. We decided to ask everybody who has a vulnerability in a smart energy device to come to us so we can help with coordinated disclosure and keep score a little bit. So the first one where we asked CVEs for solar panels is the one that Rietse just showed. A total of 6 CVEs, but who's counting? I am. The next one we had was one in car chargers. It was the IO charger firmware, which contained a whopping, I should have put a number in that, a lot of vulnerabilities. Then we got word from the good people at ANCS, and we found another vulnerability in another backend, this time for Growatt. And they have this backend, and the backend has a very convenient transfer plant. So the way these things work is they have a main account. Under the accounts, they have installer accounts, maybe they have sub-installer accounts, and then you have your account. So you can see what your inverter is producing, you can edit it, but also your installer can do it, which is handy because if your inverters break down, they're supposed to come and help you. I'm not sure if they do, but that's what the mechanism is for. But your installer can do something as well. And all we needed to do was register an installer account, use the transfer plant to assign the plant to your installer account, and Bob's your uncle. You can now control this. We would have been able to do this with every plant. Nobody gets a notification for it. And luckily, this was also solved really quick, and the backend now doesn't have a transfer plant function anymore, which was the quickest way for them to fix it. So boom, another solar panel inverter. We looked at Manicus, the smart premium charging stations, which are unfortunately outdated, so they don't get updated. Yet we got another 5 CVEs for that registered. Credits to Wilco van Beinem, who also found the Schneider Electric EV wallbox inverter problems, which is again 4 CVEs, which could lead to an authenticated takeover. This is the one that's not patched. The one from Manicus is patched. I apologize to Manicus. This is what we've registered so far. But we've got a bit of a queue, also thanks to our collaboration with cybersecurity companies like, I should now say, Bureau Veritas. And we still got CVEs in the queue for solar panels where we're waiting for any kind of response from the vendor. We have some where the vendor is their own CNA, so we need to register them to them. We've got more coming, more solar panels. And we actually got 3 cases which we now can't pick up because the CNA team at DIVD, Victor Pasman, Max Sonderhorst and myself, I need that matter, are actually so busy that we can't chew this away, but there's a lot and a lot more coming. And therefore, we're gonna need your help. If you're somewhat technical and communicative and you like talking to vendors and you can keep your mouth shut about these cool ODAs until there really is time to disclose them, then please come see me because we can use more people in our CNA team. So yeah, we really need your help, but there's a lot to do there, and I think it's really important that we get this program disclosed so that we can get these vulnerabilities fixed and get the grid a lot more secure. So Chris.
Well, thanks, Frank, for this great story on how we dissolve these vulnerabilities. You know, if you've been to hacker events in the past, you know, always the highlight was, yeah, well, now we're going to disclose a vulnerability, the vendors don't listen, you get a big rise and stuff. The world has changed. These vendors are, well, most of the time open to the findings. Some vendors even donate their stuff for free to us. Say, oh yeah, here you got it. So, well, it's not a pen test. Then you hire a company. If you don't find any vulnerabilities, it was just not interesting enough for us because we're volunteers. And yes, we need help. Little disclaimer there. Doesn't matter where you come from around the world, but you need to be a Dutch resident. That has to do with insurance. So as a DFD volunteer, you're insured against all sorts of claims from companies and stuff. So you're more off the hook. So let me finish this kind of dark story with a sort of happy end to send you away with. So the problem we're dealing with in Europe, but also in the rest of the world, the European grid is one integrated system where everything balances out. So you have the high voltage net of 400k going across borders and where our big power generators are. There they try to predict it's going to be warm, cold, people come home, people start watching movies, charge their cars, and they balance things out top down. They never expected that at the very bottom, at the people's homes, there are actually a large power generators managed from China, US, or who knows where. The system isn't designed to cope with that, leading to all sorts of problems. Where we actually need to go at? Segmentation, of course. The power grid has become a sort of internet, a sort of digital network. And, well, as the internet used to be open for everybody, there also you build segments. And, well, how might this look like? So instead of this integrated European grid, you have all sorts of places where they put batteries. Not because of security, but because of congestion. You know, because of all these solar panels and cars, they go in all sorts of directions. The grid is really choked up with all the energy being supplied. But these batteries can also be a solution. So they start balancing more at a local level, regional level, national level. And yes, these batteries are a target too now. So I'm telling you this because we are not pleading against renewable energy. I think it's the way forward. We need it. And you might be tempted to say, well, these so-called smart devices, they broaden the attack surface, so shouldn't we just stop with it? No, it's also the solution. So we're getting a much more complicated balance in demand and supply in energy. And, well, here in the Netherlands, you see these huge batteries on a municipality level, but also at your home level. And it would even be better that if we do have a blackout, it's not the total integrated system it used to be, but you can switch off some of these pockets. Then you say, okay, here's the noise. So let at least this place remain online. And that's where the sociologist comes up in me. I'm an electrical engineer, but also a sociologist. The worst thing you can have in a blackout is panic. People will start panic in a couple of days. But if you have these small islands where you can cook something or have light or charge your car or something, you can set the mass at ease. Hence these batteries. This is even a more beautiful solution. There you have these solar panels, and they're actually an island. They don't convert to the 50 hertz. It's just direct current because it goes into the cars, and if there's not enough cars, there's batteries there. It's not online, it's not connected to the main grid, it's not alternative current, it's just locally produced and consumed. These islands we need in case of blackout, and these islands we need to cope with congestion. And yeah, well, if the blackout occurs, the most important thing you need is communication. So there, I would also like to appeal to you, help us out. We came up with the idea, you know, what might still work if there's no internet and no power anymore. And everybody said, fantastic, yeah, LoRaWAN, yeah, we're going to communicate. We have these hubs, these small boxes, low frequency, large direction, low power. We can still communicate, but it did not work. If you're familiar with fantastic, after three hubs, it gets congested. But we tried. We also put up some things high, and also here at the village, D42D, we have Mesh-Tastic running there. Jeroen is also giving workshops for there. I'll use the hand mic.
Yeah?
Okay, thank you. So this didn't work, but we need to go to radio frequency communication in case of a blackout, and so we're building some of our own. So if you have ideas for that, please join us at the village. Also there we have these hacking demos with Alex and Hamza. Where are you guys? Yeah, they're sitting in the back. Hi, guys. They already gave 3 workshops every day from 11 to 12, where they, well, physically demonstrate how you do a firmware extraction from both a solar panel converter as well as a smart thermostat. And, well, Alex does the firmware extraction, flash dump, and Hamza shows how you go through the code to find vulnerabilities. A little bit of expectation management there. or a room can only hold 70 people, and up and down, now it was totally packed. So we want to come to be there in time. But it might also be that they gave this workshop 3 times. They might be exhausted, so I'm not sure if we're going to do 2 more workshops. And the biggest failure might be that these components are very sensitive, lying around with people dancing, drinking beer, and so they might break. So if you show up tomorrow, you see a sign, no workshops. Sorry, but I already did a tremendous job educating 200 hackers how they do this. So, thanks, guy. I can have a little applause for Hamza and Alex. Yeah, they also work at ENCS, the European Network of Cybersecurity. And so they do this in their daily jobs. And ENCS also discloses their vulnerabilities to us. So there they are assigned by, you know, vendors who say, can you pen test this? And when they found something, they go to the vendor and they say, well, can we disclose this to the IVD? And yeah, some of them, they collaborate and they do. So everybody's happy. The vendor got a more secure project. ENCS can share their research with the rest of the world and we can help out. And I promised I would end with a happy ending. My wish is, at the next event, I don't know if it will be Y, Sha, Om, Hip, Har, or so XXX 2029. Let's just do it. You know, we had a power outage for a short time and everybody was just sitting around. So we used this opportunity to test, you know, what kind of backup systems do we have? What kind of energy systems do we have? Do we have crisis protocols that might also work just among citizens, not depending on the authority? That's my wish, so I already added something to the call for proposals for the next event. So there's still some time for questions and I hope some answers. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, sorry. Thank you. If you have questions, here's a microphone. Please line up and we have the first question.
Thanks for great work and a great talk. Also for sustainability, we need batteries in the network, of course, to flatten out the curves of the energy prices. I didn't know about this application, but I have heard that Dutch electricity law places a ban on storing energy in the network. Is that true or are you working on it?
I cannot hear your question that good. So.
I have a bit of trouble to understand you.
Yep, it's hard to hear actually on the stage, so maybe a bit louder.
The Dutch energy law, the Energiewet, I have heard forbids storing energy in the grid. Is that something you're working on or?
There's a Dutch law saying that solar energy is forbidden in the grid?
No, storing energy, so the batteries in the grid.
Oh, storing energy? No. I'm not aware of that law, and if that's a law, I think it will be totally ridiculous, but they're already doing it, so I beg to differ, if you don't mind. Okay, next question.
I have a question about the electrical side of things. There's also software, real-time software, doing the actual control, and that also needs to be tested before it can be sold, CE compliance, that kind of stuff. Does a software update imply that it needs to be retested with each software update?
I don't know the exact regulations, but
Cyber Resilience Act.
Yeah, Cyber Resilience. So the Cyber Resilience Act mm-hmm. is a breakthrough act because it finally said that devices must be able to be remotely updated and vendors must be able to do it. So I think we are not to the point where people, where there's actual laws about how do you test this or how do you... So the chances of a CrowdStrike-like scenario on solar panels, I don't think they're hypothetical.
Okay. Yeah, well, the regulation might say you need to pen test, but they don't say how or the level of tests. I think more important is that we have regulation for end of life. So did you, as a vendor, you're demanded to provide your patches, your updates through the chain up to a certain period, and then, well, what happens afterwards? You might just switch it off because, well, that's the end of life of your product. I think that will be better, yes.
But I have also noted that switching things off is a very non-linear behavior of a very big distributed system, so you have to also think about that.
Oh, yes, sure, of course. Yes, not at once. Okay, next question.
Hello, my question is, goes in a similar direction about conformity or certification issues. And this is not about cyber resilience, but more about the grid codes. And the way I know it's done in most European countries is you need to have your devices be compliant with the grid codes. And then also this comes into play for certain kinds of plants, like larger installations reaching like more than 100 kilowatts, you need a plant certificate and a formal certification process that is needed to actually have the system installed or even to apply updates. Are you active in that direction? Is this an issue that you considered?
Well, the grid code or the net code, as it's called in the Netherlands, doesn't solve that. Because it always counts for, well, they have a certain threshold. So in the Netherlands, it's above 100 megawatts. Then you need to adhere to this code. But the problem we're addressing is that it's just a whole lot of people with a couple of kilowatts together forming a gigawatt. And all these codes don't count for the consumers. You have anything to add to that?
Maybe if you allow one more question, if in order to make the grid more resilient or to for this backup plan, you might need to consider the upcoming grid codes 2.0, or like who does provide system services like frequency regulation and stabilization issues. This is all coming up, this process coming up. I don't know my way around it, but are you active in that area too?
Well, so we're hackers, so we're mostly looking at the cybersecurity issues of it, and we're not regulation hackers, although we do have opinions.
So how
we
do you have run, IDs. How do you run 10,000 microinverters in parallel to re-establish a stable grid? Has anyone does it before?
Well, there is but this is a bit offside, and just because I'm interested in the matter. But there is so a lot of the inverters right now are grid following and frequency following and not frequency making. And as solar gets a bigger part of the mix, that might become a problem, because if classic generation then falters, they have nothing to follow. Or they follow each other, which may get weird delay oscillations. I'm not an electrochemical engineer, you are by training, but not practicing anymore. But it's the different things that do get on the agenda. I think what we're trying to put on the agenda is what is being forgotten, that yes, there's a lot of regulation and a lot of codes being written for the big stuff. If you want to trade at the unbalanced market, yeah, then you become a big installation as well. But all the small installations together actually add up to a very, very, very big installation. And the 10 gigawatts was just the 10 gigawatts that was active at that point in time. And with the rotation of the sun, that number changes. It's quite sunny out there right now. If the Netherlands all of a sudden loses all power, solar power. It's the question of whether or not that can be compensated. And it's more than the 5 gigawatts of spare capacity that I read in a report that was made by Secura, Bureau Veritas, and the top sector, Dutch Energy. So, yeah, the small ones are bigger together than any of the big ones we have.
Okay, thank you.
Any other question?
And let me take a look at the desk. Are there any questions from the internet? No, of course. So then we have a couple of minutes left. Actually, I have a question.
Sure.
I noticed that you focus on solar energy. You briefly mentioned windmills.
Yes.
So what I learned is that one windmill creates a lot more power than a lot of PV modules. So how is it that you focus on the solar modules? Is it because they are more private installations, or?
No, it's a different ball game. That most windmills are on sea, and they're managed by a large grid operator. Mm. So therefore, it's more under control. But yes, they also do connect with a VPN to the evil internet. So there you also have this power at your disposal to create a blackout. You can also pull other tricks there that you change the sinus. You know, you just switch it 180 degrees and then all hell breaks out. These things burn. It's next on our to-do list.
Yeah, and there's a practical one.
But we don't have like windmills in my backyard. Like the solar panels, I install them in my house because I have a new house, right? So yeah, give me a windmill. I will try to open it and see what happens. So.
Yeah, but I haven't found a windmill on Marktplaats yet.
Nice.
Windmills. Anybody? Oh, we have from. Okay.
Yeah, in the presentation there was the slide with what if one of the big leaders had the big red button to push the 10 gigawatt switch, but is that also within the scope of your organization? Because you're looking at the vulnerabilities and having them patched, but if they have gained access without using a vulnerability, but just because they get access to the switch.
Yeah, no, in DIVD, our focus is solely on potential victims. We do get a lot of requests from law enforcement to help out to beat the criminals. We do get a lot of requests to bother the APTs, and they're probably not very happy with the stuff we're doing. Your web server got hacked by the Russians, right? Yes, yeah, you got attacked. And it's like the Red Cross of the internet. You know, if the Red Cross goes to Ukraine, you might as well ask them, well, carry a gun, shoot the Russians. Help the poor. No, we help everybody, even the Russians. So we're kind of the Red Cross of the internet.
Yeah, I think one of the things that is our job is awareness. So if you look at what we could have done with the vulnerabilities that you discovered, you have to remember that any vendor or any government body able to control the vendor can do without actually hacking. Because if we can turn it off with remote hacking, then the vendor can turn it off without any hacking involved. And then it just becomes a matter of regulations. And in certain countries, if the government asks to jump, they jump first and then ask how high.
We don't.
Yep.
Thanks.
Hello. I saw your talk about the Solomon 3 years ago, this talk today as well. You focused primarily on power generation, but have you also investigated power consumption? Heat pumps, washing machines, dryers, large factories, PLCs comes to mind. If you can control enough of them, you could also bring down the grids, correct?
Correct. Yes. And you're looking there, you're looking for a sweet spot of devices that are often smart, because aluminum, they're low regulated. So if you have a large aluminum factory and you need a lot of energy, then you're in constant contact with the grid operator, because they will ask you not to use that power on certain times, and they will ask you to take net congestion into account. So you're looking for things that are common, that are smart, because if it's smart, it's vulnerable. and you're looking for things that consume reasonable amounts of power. And therefore, car chargers were the first ones to come into mind. Also, there's already somebody looking at them. But for instance, yeah, if we can find a vulnerability in a smart oven and turn on the thermolytic cleansing function of all of them at the same time, yeah, you can reach the same effect as turning off a lot of generation. And if you do it at the same time and then seesaw it, it's gonna be even more interesting.
Yeah, so up until recently, we were mostly scanning online for software. So Jeroen Ellemeyer is sitting over there, the head of research and development. Energy is just one of the themes where we demonstrated, okay, we can, you know, work for a certain sector. He's now working on creating something for healthcare, for OT, water management. So there, well, you have different partners, you have different machines you need to hack. It's a whole different ballpark. So this is actually our development as the IVD that we're going into these themes. So yeah, very good question, and working on it. And you are working on it, right?
Well, no, it's the same, right? With the windmill, we're all volunteers and we like to hack stuff and break. My hobby is breaking stuff. So it's like if you install an oven that has Wi-Fi or whatever, yeah, I will go try to break that stuff or get the firmware. But it's like the solar panels, it's like 3-4 months of research, and the code, what I found is like, yeah, it's really easy. But before you get there, it's just, my kids are like, who is that guy there in the office, right? So it's like, the only thing he does is breaking computers and doing stuff. So yeah, that if you have an oven, just give it, or a windmill, if anybody has a windmill.
Yeah, yeah, and we can talk a great deal, but we're standing on the shoulders of giants, of people who actually break the stuff
that can
come on the stage and that don't try to on the stage. So a shout out to all the other DIVD volunteers that aren't here.
And I guess that's the perfect ending. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I also have a lot of more questions. But like you, maybe you follow those guys and ask your questions later at the outside the tent or something like that. So thank you very much. Another round of applause for those three.